Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Book Off, the literary podcast with a difference, with me, Joe Haddo. I hope wherever you are in the world, you're staying safe and well. And in these times of isolation, I hope this podcast can provide a little bit of company for you as we all muddle through this bloody virus together. On today's episode, we'll be discussing two debut novels which are the talk of the town at the moment. The books in question are Girl A and The Push, and the authors are Abigail Dean and Ashley Audrain. Hello and welcome to you both.
Thank you, Joe. And hi, Abby.
Hey, Ashley. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Joe. Abby and I have been chatting a lot just through messages on social media, saying just, you know, enjoying this debut experience together and saying we wish we were, you know, in a fancy hotel lobby somewhere having a drink together. But this is a good second.
Yes. Oh, good. I'm glad you said that you were messaging each other about the sort of authorly experience of debut novels as opposed to messaging each other going, are you doing this weird podcast with that bloke? Is he going to be okay? What have we let ourselves in for?
No, it's been really, really nice having sort of support and having like chats with other debut novelists. I think there's sometimes this sort of perception of the literary world, you know, in movies and TV as being quite like cold and unfriendly. And I think we've definitely found the opposite as a general rule.
Yes, for sure.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I think it's fair to say publishing is one of the greatest industries to be involved in. And I should say to both of you, congratulations on these brilliant debuts and on writing them and indeed on getting them published. This is a big moment.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Joe.
I'm just going to read some stats here. I don't usually do stats. I feel a bit like Alex Horn of Taskmaster, but I think it's worth pointing out two little lines from each of your books' press releases, which I got. The Push, already sold in 30 territories worldwide, with TV and film rights sold. No big deal. Girl A, already sold in 26 territories worldwide and soon to be made into a TV series. Sorry about you. So I would say these are going pretty well, having only just come out.
Yes, I'm sure that Abby and I feel the same way, which is just, you know, incredibly lucky. And the whole journey, I mean, you write for years and you write with, you know, no expectation. You just write because it's what you're compelled to do and what you love to do. And to have things kind of turn out this way on the other side of that is, you know, it's, I always say it's as surreal as you might imagine it to be. It is like pinch yourself every day kind of thing. And yeah, just very grateful for it all.
I'm sure. And Abby, I'm sure you echo that as well. Can you believe it's sort of come time to share this book with more than just your editor and your agent?
No, I mean, absolutely echo what Ashley said about how surreal it is. I think that the strange thing is, you know, you spend so long writing, and it's in a way it's quite an isolated experience. You know, you kind of write in a way with relatively few hopes or expectations necessarily, and then I think suddenly to kind of share to share the words and the story with other people does just feel, I think, you know, 90% fabulous and then 10% a little terrifying. But it's generally just wonderful and yeah, totally unexpected.
So over the next sort of 30 minutes or so in this podcast, we're going to talk about these two brilliant books. Obviously, we're going to get a sense of your sort of reading tastes, what you've been reading, if you have indeed been reading over the last few months. And of course, we'll be doing the book off at the very end of the podcast. This is where each of you gets to pitch us, me and the listeners, a book that you absolutely love and you think that we should all read. And we'll find out what you're putting up against each other a little later on. But firstly, Ashley, let's come to you and talk about The Push for a bit, because you started writing the book when your son was just 6 months old. Can you tell us about how it came about and sort of the journey that you went on to write it?
Sure, yes. So I had always wanted to be a writer. I mean, if you had have asked me what I wanted to be when I was a little girl, that you know, that's what I would have said. But took writing courses at night and, you know, after my, you know, day job was done and all of that. But hadn't pursued writing a novel more seriously until I did become a mother. And, you know, there was something about, you know, what I guess I'd always also been kind of fascinated by motherhood, you know, just this idea of why women do it in the first place and sort of, you know, how life changes immensely and how, you know, you're going to change immensely, but you don't know how. And there's so much unknown. And that had always kind of fascinated me about the whole experience. And so I had gone into motherhood with a bit of trepidation myself, I think, for those reasons. But then when I had my son, yeah, he had some unexpected kind of health complications after he was born. And that really rocked me in a way that, you know, you were already, you know, kind of stunned by the experience of becoming a mother. But, you know, with that on top of it, it really was a struggle in those early days, just dealing with that, you know, and trying to kind of find my footing in it all. And I thought a lot in those days about expectations, you know, expectations of motherhood and how we are, you know, taught it's supposed to feel and how we're, you know, we think it's going to look. And, you know, even the way we're supposed to talk about motherhood, you know, with other women and, you know, the pressures in society to kind of to do that. When he was around six months old, I still wasn't really sleeping, but I was sleeping a bit more by then, I think. And I felt this really burning urge to write, and I felt, you know, highly creative at that time. And that is all, you know, I have a handful of spare hours in the week at that point, and all I wanted to do with those hours was write. And I had this story in me and I wanted to tell it. And that is kind of how the book began, in these little slivers of time, you know, scene by scene, writing about motherhood from the perspective of a woman for, you know, whom it did not turn out as she had hoped. And then, you know, over the course of 3 years, because that's how long it takes when I think you're only writing in these small chunks of time, it became The Push. And and it felt sort of like it was in shape to kind of finally share with somebody and send out into the world. And so that was kind of the journey of how it happened. And apologies if, as I was talking, you could hear my son in the background there. We're home learning. Oh gosh, we're home learning like the rest of the world right now. And so it's not the best time to be trying to do, you know, media from your kitchen table. But thank you for bearing with me on that.
Well, no, not a problem. And actually, it's a showcase of motherhood right there, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Well, just for those that may have read about the book or seen it but not got to it yet, can you just tease us a little bit about the story that you've written?
Sure, yes. So it is about a woman named Blythe, and she comes from a history of women who have struggled greatly with motherhood, you know, her own mother and grandmother in particular. And, you know, she's determined that she wants to break that cycle, you know, that she's going to be the very warm, present, you know, engaging mother that she herself never had. And so she and her husband welcome a baby, Violet, and it's not long until she begins to realize that there is something wrong with Violet. She's, you know, aloof and distant and quite an angry little girl, and soon sort of starts to demonstrate this kind of malicious behavior towards other children. And the problem, of course, is that her husband, Fox, cannot see what Blythe sees in Violet. You know, he thinks this is very much a result of, you know, this maternal anxiety that she has carried for so long, and this kind of the fear about motherhood that she's always had. And so they try to move on and have another baby named Sam. And, you know, in Sam, she really finds that maternal connection that she's always been looking for, until something goes, you know, sort of horribly wrong in the family. And they're sort of forced to take a look at, you know, who Violet really is, who Blythe really is, you know, what has happened. And the family sort of unravels from there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. Abby, much like Ashley, you've sort of always wanted to write, haven't you? Because you loved reading from an early age. You were a bookseller before uni. You studied English for your degree. So is it a similar thing to Ashley, that you sort of always wanted to be a writer?
Yes. Yeah, it is. It is pretty similar. I think there was maybe like a 6 month period when I wanted to be a doctor, but I'm the most squeamish, like fainting of people. So it would have been a complete disaster. So yeah, I think, as a child, I was reading, you know, like Goosebumps and Christopher Pike and Judy Blume, and just really loved books. And I think, you know, the idea of being a writer was something that was always there, but weirdly it didn't seem like a kind of it almost didn't seem like a real profession to me, in terms of it didn't seem like it was necessarily within reach. I spent sort of a lot of my 20s not really writing. I became a lawyer, and it was a pretty kind of intense job, and didn't write very much for those years. And I think it really wasn't until kind of coming up to my 30th birthday that I sort of started to question, like, you know, why did you stop doing this thing that you actually loved so much? And so that was kind of a bit of a sort of challenge to myself, like, why not go back to it and give it a shot, and just see what comes of that. So I sort of was able to leave my job and take 3 months to start writing Girl A. And yeah, everything sort of snowballed from there, which still, yeah, still feels very like improbable and wonderful.
And can you tell us a little bit more about the story and about the Gracie family?
Yes, sure. So Girl A is Lex Gracie, and she, as a child, manages to escape from her family home, which has been dubbed the House of Horrors by the press. And in doing so, she frees her 6 brothers and sisters and exposes her parents' crimes. And after those events, Lex wants very little to do with her family. 15 years later, she is living as an attorney in New York, and really just refusing to think about the events of her childhood. But at the beginning of the novel, her mother dies in prison. And when she does, she leaves Lex and her siblings, the House of Horrors, where they grew up. And Lex kind of wants to turn the childhood home into something good. But to do so, she has to return to the UK and reconnect, really, with her siblings and sort of start to face the events that happened in her past. So it's really, I guess, a story about sort of family strength and resilience, and about, you know, revisiting those sibling loyalties and battles of your childhood, but also it's about the past and how that continues to haunt the present.
I have to say, both these books are really great. I loved reading them, and they're both page turners, and I was sort of I was going to say away with the fairies. That makes you sound like I wasn't really concentrating. What I mean is I was able to close out the rest of the world while reading them. And I think that's something that a lot of people are looking for in literature at the moment. And you mentioned family resilience there as well. I think that's something that quite a lot of us are going through in a different sense to your book, Abby. But like, we're not able to see our families, or certainly our wider families, at the moment, and the resilience is just having to sort of stay connected virtually. And I don't know, not be able to go and have a hug. It's a bit tough, isn't it?
It is pretty tough. I think that, you know, when Ashley says, you know, in one word, we maybe be kind of connecting and being able to sort of meet over drinks occasionally, it's pretty tough not being able to do that. And that's at the sort of, you know, most sort of luxurious level. I think just on a day-to-day basis, it's been a tough time not seeing family and not seeing friends and not having the support that offers. It's been a really sort of challenging 10 months for everybody, I think.
And Ashley, you come from a background of publishing, and you worked for Penguin in Canada for a number of years, so you sort of know the fanfare around a book publishing and how in normal times, quote unquote, you know, there'd probably be a bottle of something shared between you know, some of the media industry perhaps, and the publishing industry and the booksellers, you know, perhaps in a nice little bar somewhere. But of course none of that can happen at the moment, so it must be quite a different, I mean, albeit still brilliant, but it must be quite a different reality as to how you might have imagined it.
It is, you know, it is so different. I think nobody, obviously no author wants to be publishing their debut novel in a pandemic. you know, but I, you know, I honestly, I'm sure Abby feels the same way. I'm just so grateful that it's publishing at all, that I will take it. We will, you know, we're all just kind of going to, you know, do our best. But yeah, I think it does make, you know, the launch of a book look quite different from many different angles. I think, you know, there is something I was always looking forward to was just, you know, meeting readers in real life, you know, like that experience. But something that I, you know, love to do as a reader, you know, go to a book event and meet the author and hear them speak and kind of have that connection and, you know, feel that community of book readers, you know, all in a room together. I love that. Just as a reader, I miss that. And that's an experience I'm sorry to be missing right now. But although I have to say, just the, you know, the connection with people online, even through social media, is remarkable. And I've seen a lot of that love for Abby and her book too. So I feel like that, you know, thankful for that, for sure. That is great. But yeah, it definitely looks different. And I think, you know, one benefit of it is that, you know, because I used to be a publicist working in publicity, you know, I know the grind of putting an author out on the road and those, you know, early flights and the late nights and the late nights of drinks that follow and all of that, which is so fun, but it also is taxing, of course. And so there has been something sort of very calming and sort of grounding about, as I said, sort of doing this all from the kitchen table. you know, so there's that about it as well. So if we're looking for, you know, silver linings, I guess that's one of them.
Well, and also I think it's good to note that actually, yes, no debut novelist necessarily wants to be publishing their first book in a pandemic. No author wants to be publishing their book in a pandemic, but thank goodness we are publishing, because I think it's just needed more than ever now. New books and stories and escapism. I mean, it's really important, don't you think?
Yeah, I have to say, I think that books have been like a salvation over the last 10 months. Potentially the one sort of good life-changing thing about this, I think, has been a bit more time to read, and I think that's kind of a luxury that I've definitely had. And you know, I still think there's a total joy in the fact that one of the coolest things about being published is that people start to send you books, and it's been incredible to read the books, some of the books that are coming out this year. That's been amazing. I think both Ashley and I have been able to kind of read each other's book and kind of we've sent sort of like adoring messages. Like, I was totally gripped by the book, absolutely adored it. So yeah, but books have been they've been a bit of a lifesaver this year, definitely. A bit of escapism and, you know, yeah, just as somewhere else to go, really.
And on that, before we turn to the book off and to find out about two books which you're going to be championing, what have you been reading recently? Anything that's sort of stuck out? I imagine, Abby, from what you're saying, you've been reading quite a lot of contemporary fiction, stuff that maybe isn't even out yet, but that's coming later in the year.
Yeah, that has been like just totally fabulous. I think, you know, if you told 10-year-old me that she'd be receiving books in the post on a regular basis, she would have just completely lost it and gone wild. And that's basically what I'm still like. So recently,
and me, I'm the same.
I'm glad it's not just me. I've
the postman doesn't understand why I cheer every time that he arrives at the door. It's like he thinks I love him, but it's just because they've got another book.
Yeah, I think it's that thing where I love the postman. The postman like hates me. He's like, why is this girl getting these packages? Like, stop it. I've read a few things that I've kind of really kind of looking forward to next year. Greenwich Park is a thriller that's set in South London, very near to me, by Catherine Faulkner. That totally gripped me for sort of 2 days in the middle of lockdown. It's kind of the story of two different families and a crime that was committed in the past and how that comes back to infiltrate the present. I've kind of loved that, and I've also been reading some older books that I've just that have sort of passed me by. I'm reading Dennis Johnson's Train Dreams at present, which is this kind of beautiful novel set in Idaho around the 40s and 50s, and just gorgeously written and really, really poignant and moving. So it's been a real mix between some great modern stuff and also revisiting some things that I've missed in the past.
Yeah. And what about you, Ashley, in between homeschooling? Have you found some time to be reading?
A little, yes. But I like Abby said, truly, Girl A is one of the most, I mean, just compelling, gripping things that I have read in recent memory. It's just, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It made me feel the way I felt when I read Room, and Room by Emma Donoghue is one of my favorite books, and I had that same feeling reading Room. And so, yes, it was just a treat to read. But I totally agree about the joy of getting, you know, proofs in the mail and these books that are, you know, coming out and getting kind of a first sneak peek at them. I love that. And a couple of those that I've really enjoyed. One is coming out in March, and it's called The Lamplighters by Emma Stonex. And Abby, I don't know if you've read this yet, but it's so good. Oh, you've read it, Joe. Good. Yes. It's really something. It feels different, and it has an epic feel to it. And it's a mystery. You know, the literary mystery about a man who goes missing at a lighthouse, and it sort of explores kind of what happened with the men who were working at the lighthouse at the time and the perspectives of the families who are left behind as they all kind of try to sort of figure out what had happened. It is so atmospheric. You know, you feel like you are there on the lighthouse in the middle of this ocean. It is haunting. There are just beautiful scenes about grief and love. And I was so taken by this book. I loved it. And I'm really excited to see what happens when it comes out in March for Emma. She's lovely. I really enjoyed it.
That sounds so good.
Another book I'll mention that came out last year in North America, and it's just coming out this month in the UK, and it's got lots of great buzz, but it's so deserving, is Luster by Raven Leilani. It is just, it's a remarkable book. It's so different than anything I've read. And, you know, it has a great story of this, you know, woman who sort of becomes involved as sort of a third in this marriage in a very kind of strange way. And she's an artist, and she's kind of exploring what her art means to her, you know, through in that context. And but really beyond kind of, you know, the story is her writing. Her writing is just every paragraph and every sentence. I mean, she's just a brilliant writer. And sometimes I just love to have those books where you know, as a writer, you pause on every page and think like, wow, how has she done this? And what, you know, it's like the study of craft that book is, I mean, it's remarkable. And I think about the ending all the time. And so I can highly recommend that one as well.
Fantastic. Oh, thank you both for those extra recommendations. And I think it's great that, you know, people are reading during lockdown or whatever, wherever you're listening from. You know, you might have different rules and different states of this pandemic, but books, I think, have really sort of come into their own over the last 12 months and will continue to do so. So it's just great to have some recommendations of things that are coming up as well, some stuff we can look forward to. But of course, we must say, before all of those wonderful books that have just been mentioned, you should buy The Push and you should buy Girl A, because they are worth reading.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's time now for the book off, and this is when each of my guests gets 3 minutes to tell us about a book they absolutely love and why we should all read it. So before we get into the nitty-gritty, let's find out which books are being put up against each other in this book off. Abby, which book are you going to be talking about today?
I am going to be talking about The Beautiful Indifference by Sarah Hall.
Oh, fabulous, Sarah Hall. This is a short story collection, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's a collection of 7 short stories. And one of my favourite books of all time and sort of most inspiring books, I think, in terms of writing of all time.
Wow. I know that you're a huge fan of this podcast series and have devoured every single episode, but just in case you missed Sarah Hall, she was on our last series talking about Summer Water. So if you're a fan, you might want to go back and listen to that one, because she really, the way she talks about writing is just really wonderful, I think. So that's one for you. Anyway, I'm excited to hear about that one. And Ashley, what are you putting up against Sarah Hall?
So in solidarity, I have picked a debut from a female writer that came out this time last year. And that book is Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reid.
Oh, fantastic. Oh,
yes, a great book. And long-listed for the Booker Prize last year.
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, two brilliant choices, I must say. So let's get into the admin of the thing. We need to decide who goes first and who goes second. Abby, as your first name comes first alphabetically, would you like to go first or second?
Oh, I don't mind at all. This is one of those things where I'm going to do. They're like, oh, I don't care, I don't mind, panic.
Are you basically passing this over to Ashley to choose?
Well, you know what? Given it's Abby and Ashley, should I go first? Because it's like alphabetical order, and that seems sort of like an easy way of deciding.
I think that's a very, very good, yes, very, very good.
It's a good job I'm not like appointed to make decisions very often, because we wouldn't get very far.
And that then means, Ashley, that you get to choose which of these two implements rings you out at the 3 minute mark. So you can either have the school bell or you can have the bicycle horn.
I will choose the school bell. It brings back memories. I will choose that.
You're going to have the school bell. Okay. So So for any new listeners, just to explain, Abby and Ashley each get 3 minutes on the clock, uninterrupted, to tell us about the book of their choice. They don't have to use all of their 3 minutes if they don't want to, but as we reach the three-minute mark, I will be honking and ringing each of them out, and they'll be cut down mid-speech. So, Abby, we'll start with you. I've put 3 minutes on the clock. You don't have to use it all, but we'll see how you do. So it's 3 minutes to tell us about The Beautiful Indifference. Over to you.
Thank you. So this, The Beautiful Indifference, is a collection of seven short stories by Sarah Hall. And although I promise that this is not going to be some form of dissertation, I there's a quote that I've been thinking about a lot this year in relation to reading, which is from the wonderful Jhumpa Lahiri, which is, "That's the thing about books. They let you travel without moving your feet." And it's something that I've definitely been wanting and needing from books this year, just a chance to be able to get out of my flat and kind of out of myself. And I think that the seven stories in The Beautiful Indifference have such kind of wonderful different geographies and different locations. So in one story, you're on a beach in Mozambique after an argument with your boyfriend in a really ominous nightfall. And the next, you know, you're suddenly lakeside in Finland and your partner's gone for a swim and he's been slightly longer than you expected. And then I think for me, this is kind of the most amazing setting and the one that kind of really reminds me of home. You know, you're in the farmlands and bogs of Cumbria with its kind of terrible weather. So The Beautiful Indifference is very much a book that I think you can travel into and that you can travel with. And something else I love about it, it's a really sensual book about women and about bodies. And this is one of the things, it's actually one of the things, Ashley, that I think I really loved about The Push, that the insight into kind of a female-dominated secret world, but written about with such frankness. Sarah Hall just writes amazingly about the female body and about sex and desire. And I think the whole collection has this really raw intimacy and walks a very fragile line between sort of sensuality and darkness and danger. And there's one image that I often think of from the collection where a woman is driving to meet her lover for the first time and she starts to speed in her car to kind of get there faster. And then there's this terrible, she has this kind of terrible image of the car crashing and of kind of her own corpse and how it would look, you know, to be this dressed up going somewhere her family doesn't know about. Each of the stories kind of walks that dangerous line where you don't quite know if you're in a love story or in a horror story. And I think that's the last thing I'd say, is that what I look for in books is just that they make me feel something. And these stories are so unsettling, they're so unnerving. They give you a feeling that something terrible could happen any minute. I think about them like once a week, I'd say at least. And I think if you read them, you'll be thinking about them for a long time, too.
Oh, wow. You pretty much brought that in perfectly on time.
Just in time. Just a bit of the horn.
Yeah, just a little bit of the horn, as it were. Yes, very good, Abby. Well done. That was wonderful. And you can have a rest now and a breather. And we'll talk about all that you've said in a little bit more detail in just a moment. But you relax. I'm going to put 3 minutes back on the clock. How are you feeling, Ashley?
Oh, good. Well, I'm sold on that book. So thank you, Abby. I'm going to order it after this is over. Thank you. That was great.
So it's over to you then, 3 minutes on the clock, to tell us about Such a Fun Age.
Great. So every so often, I think we need to read a book that makes us physically cringe because we are so uncomfortable. And while that might not sound like a compelling opening pitch for a book, you know, I would argue that is exactly what makes the novel Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reid a must read. The story begins with a 26-year-old black woman named Amira Tucker, who is babysitting a white toddler when she's accused of kidnapping by a grocery store security guard. And the story that follows the events that happen from there, you know, it goes through the rotating perspectives of the two main characters. We have Amira, the babysitter, and Alex, her white 33-year-old you know, upper middle class employer and the mother of that toddler. And Amira is, of course, furious and humiliated by what has happened in the store. And Alex takes it upon herself to try to make it right. She inserts herself into Amira's life and tries to make Amira more a part of hers, but all with questionable motives. And meanwhile, Amira is, you know, focused on much more pressing problems. She's trying to find her way in life. She's trying to make ends meet. And she's worried about how she's going to afford health insurance. This book is a piercing social commentary about race and class, about, you know, the messy dynamics of privilege, about emotional labor and money, and about friendship and motherhood. It's also as enjoyable and bingey as anything I've ever read. I just wanted to stay in Kylie Reed's head for, you know, as long as I could after I'd finished reading. She has a gift for, you know, capturing the seemingly smaller scale moments in life that are symbolic of bigger systematic problems in the world. And I think it's, you know, these nuances in behavior and language and her writing that will really make you think. I started by saying this book makes you cringe, and it has some highly awkward scenes that you just cannot look away from. But I take a certain delight in having that emotion as a reader, because I hate having that emotion in real life. You know, you will feel embarrassment for these people, especially Alex, but you will also feel hugely conflicted at times. You will think something, you know, someone is terrible in one scene and that their behavior is shameful, and then Kylie will serve you with just the right sliver of empathy for that same character in the next scene. You know, I love uncomfortable fiction of all kinds, and I think we learn something about ourselves when we're uncomfortable. You know, for me, some of the cringy parts of this book made me reflect on my own behavior, if I'm, you know, entirely honest with myself, but that is what is so good about this book. You know, as a reader, you're not going to feel like Kylie Reed is trying to, you know, tell you something specific. She's not here to teach you how to feel. She is commenting on the world around her, and she is giving you the story she wanted to write. And you're going to feel things when you read this book, and you get the impression that, you know, she doesn't care how you feel as long as you do feel. She puts us on our own journey in this novel. It's a hugely enjoyable and thought-provoking one, and I think that experience is, you know, an absolute gift to readers.
Woo! Woo! Brought it in with 5 seconds to spare there, Ashley. That is pretty impressive.
Perfect. I practiced. Thank
I think
you.
Both of you, yeah. I feel like both of you like had a timer on or something, because that was unbelievable.
We snuck it in. We were just in time.
Thank you so much, both of you. Ashley, take a breather. Have a sip of water. Relax. Abby, let's talk about the absolutely wonderful Sarah Hall. I don't know this collection, and much like Ashley, now I want to order it and I want to read it. I love that you quoted books, they let you travel without moving your feet. And my goodness, that's sort of what we've been talking about in this episode, isn't it? And what we'll continue to talk about this year. So important to get a sense of escapism from the pages that you're reading. And then all the different locations, the fact that each story is sort of different and yet they're connected. And then I've written down in quite big letters, sex. I'm trying to think why I wrote that, but that's because you were talking about the sort of sensuality of the writing, the sort of danger aspect, and the last thing you said just really got me. You know, is it a love story or is it a horror story? And I just think, wow, yeah, if you could just sort of sell a book to me on those lines, I think, just saying that. How long ago did you read it?
I think I read it when I was in my early 20s. And yeah, I was just sort of incredibly moved and disturbed by it at the same time. I think that the sort of love story and horror story element, one of the things that I found most disconcerting is I think you don't necessarily know even when the stories come to an end, which of those is the case. And I think that's potentially why it stays with me, is, you know, that idea that I'm still wondering, like, you know, were that couple, did they have a happy ending, or did things end horrifically and sort of grotesquely? And yeah, that's why I think it kind of lingers.
And it's interesting you talking about how well Sarah writes about women and their bodies and the sort of sensual side of it. On a podcast last year that we did, one of the book offs with Kieran Millwood Hargrave and with Daisy Johnson, we were talking about sort of writing good sex, you know, and actually getting it right so that you feel something when you're reading it, not just a slight sort of like awkwardness or it being a bit cheesy or whatever. And so hearing you talk about it in this way, you know, because it's hard to know. I'm sort of saying it in the sense that it's not an easy thing to get right. And evidently someone like Sarah has nailed it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the case. You know, that, you know, this, you know, the fact that there's even a sort of award for you know, the Bad Snacks competition in literature. You know, I think that it's almost kind of terrifying sometimes, I think, as a writer to sort of approach those scenes. But Sarah Hall just does it kind of so fantastically. And I'd also actually, I think Daisy Johnson's Everything Under, she writes beautifully about sex and about the human body as well. So yeah, I'm really interested to hear her talk about it because I think she's just stunning when she writes about that.
Yeah, in that book, you're right, particularly, she writes brilliantly about it. And I think they when they were discussing it with me, they brought up Jeanette Winterson as well as someone who writes amazing sex on the page. So there we go. A few little options for you. Let's move over, Ashley, to talk about Kylie Reid. This is a book I have read and it's a book I know. It's a book I enjoyed very much. Hearing you talk about it, this is what I love so much about the Book Off, is that often I haven't read the books that are being pitched, but in the case of when I have, I often sort of hear something new about it, or I feel like I could get something out of it from a second read. And hearing you talk about it has done that to me. You're so right about the, you know, physically cringing at it. And you mentioned the awkward scenes. I remember reading it and literally just going, oh my God, like, can I just put this down for a moment, you know? And I think part of that is because we can imagine it happening.
That's right. Yeah, I think
which makes it worse.
It makes it worse because it does feel so real, like plausible. Like you can really see, you know, a conversation like that or a scene like that unfolding, and or maybe you have, or maybe you've been a part of it. You know, there's a lot of, I think, a lot of kind of self-reflection in this book about, you know, you can be a very good-meaning, you know, loving person, but carry biases with you every day. And, you know, those dualities do exist in people. And, you know, the character of Alex in the book, really simple, she is that. You know, she has good intentions, but she is, you know, she is not self-aware, and she has put herself, you know, because of all the many privileges she has, you know, had in her life, you know, at the center of everything. And I think that, you know, that I don't think that's uncommon. We know that. And so this book was just, it was, you know, I hope it really makes people think, you know, about themselves in that way.
Yeah, well, it did me as potentially on a scale of most privileged people. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd be up there, wouldn't I? White male, Western male, you know, and it did make me think that. And actually what you said about it being a social commentary, but it's not a lecture. You know, Kylie Reid is not lecturing here, and actually it is a really enjoyable, bingey, as you put it, read. It's so clever, I think, to be able to get that balance right. And that's what I took away from it last year when I read it. So I thought both pictures were very good, and, you know, taking them right up to the time as well, like a pair of pros. I've got to choose one though to take home, because that's the game. And based on, oh, it's hard. This is a tough one. Based on those pictures, I think I'm going to take home Kylie Reid. Such a fun age.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a good pitch.
Oh, thank you. Abby, I was sold. I was sold through your whole thing. And as I said it, yeah, you did that book. Yes, a wonderful justice. It's great.
And I think we'll both be ordering that and reading it, won't we, Ashley, after
Abby's
pitch?
Yes, for sure. No, this was fun. Thank
you. I tell you what, it's very expensive for me doing this podcast.
I can imagine, just a full basket at all times. I love that we both picked books that just sort of make you feel a lot as well, and whether that's necessarily like a comfortable emotion or not doesn't really matter. It's just that sort of, like, you know, the emotion itself that sort of really really kind of comes through, I thought. So I love that we both kind of went along those lines.
Yeah, and actually, you know, I think they were both very different books, but you could draw some comparisons. And you know, they both sound absolutely brilliant. And I have to say, as a fan of Sarah Hall, I'll definitely be checking out The Beautiful Indifference. So, Abby, thank you for bringing that to my and our attention. And if you haven't read Summer Water, by the way, you should check that out, because, it's a short story, but told from several different perspectives. So they read like individual stories, but they're about the sort of same event, or rather, you know, the same sort of passing of time. So you might like that. Girl A by Abigail Dean is out now. It's published by HarperCollins. And The Push by Ashley Audren is also out, published by Michael Joseph. And we suggest you add them to your basket and put them on your bookshelves as soon as possible, because they are absolutely fabulous. Abby, Ashley, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your wonderful recommendations, and wish you the best of luck with these two novels and anything that comes in the future.
Oh, thank you. This was so much fun. Thanks, Abby. Thanks, Joe.
This was great. Thanks for having us.
Take care, guys. Thanks so much.